Thank you all for coming. If I could encourage you please to turn off your phones. Second. So just to thank our sponsor again, the Shirim for 2023. Our anonymous sponsor, Le'ilin Nishmas, Brian Abbas-Bendit and Zeli Ben Kalman. We're very grateful to the sponsor for all that sponsorship. Now, last week I left you on Shpilkas. I bet you haven't been able to sleep for a whole week worrying about whether you can or whether you can't. We started last week looking at the foundations on this issue. And let me recap with those foundations, because this is a complicated sugya. It's not a straightforward issue. And I also don't want to present this as a, on the one hand, on the other hand kind of issue. There are many different halachic issues where there's a genuine debate between the big guns, and some say this and some say that. Just pulling an example out of the air, you know, organ donation. There is a genuine major halachic debate between those poskim who say that brain death is the definition of halachic death and those that say that heartbeat is the definition of halachic death. And there really is, it's hard if you like to choose. I mean, we don't get to choose, you ask a shayla, but there's a genuine debate. On this, it's really very much 99% on one hand and 1% on the other hand. Maybe not quite that much, but more in that range, because there is really an overwhelming a view that you're just not allowed to go into churches. We'll see where that comes from a little bit in the modern poskim. But there are little ptachim here and there, which we'll deal with and look at some of the more fringe approaches as we go through today. Okay, so let's start with what we did last week. We saw last week that the Gemara is extremely clear that you are not allowed to go into a bet avodah zara. That much is not a debate. A pagan temple is off limits for Jews. Even to the point that there is, says the Mishnah at the beginning of Avodah Zarah, a concern of chashad. Chashad means that I'm not going to the temple, but I'm walking down a road that leads to the temple. Says the Mishnah, am I allowed to do that? People will say, look where Manny's going, he's heading off to the pagan temple. The Mishnah said, if it's a road that goes somewhere else as well, then that's okay. But if it's a road that only goes to that temple, then that's another level of prohibition. There's a rabbinic prohibition of chashad that we're worried people are going to suspect you of, etc. The question, the $64,000 question is, okay, that's clear about Avodah Zarah, but what about Christianity? Is Christianity Avodah Zarah? The Gemara we saw has one line which was censored out of the Gemara, which said, the Yom Notzrim, the day of the Nazarites, is Avodah Zarah. Which Rashi said, if you remember, which was also censored out, that's Sunday. And it's a reference to the Christians. And almost all poskim go with this line. The Rambam says this. We'll see the Rashba, the Ritva. We saw Rashi, the Shulchan Aruch passes this way. That Christianity is, without any question, Avodah Zarah. And therefore, you're not allowed to go into a church. That may even be an Issa D'Oraita. We'll see where that could come from. Certainly not allowed to pray or take part in any kind of service. Let's just start with number one, which is a recap of the Rambam Shita, which I think is important. Says the Rambam, and he didn't change on this throughout his life. This is from the Perush to the Mishnah, but the same in the Mishnah Torah and later. Lefi she'ein mutar b'shum panim. There is absolutely no permission likanis le'ir she'esh bod avodah zarah to go into a city in which there's avodah zarah even. V'kol she'ken la'durba, you certainly can't live there. V'kol she'ken la'schorba, you certainly can't go for a tiul there, for a tourist trip, to even to a city which has avodah zarah. Well, if you can't, yes, you have to know, therefore, shekol ir mi ari ha'uma, uma ha'notzrit, all Christian cities, she'esh lehem ba'abama, which they have an altar there, ritzoni lama, what I mean by that is bet tefilatam, a church, ashehu bet avodah zarah belo safek. This is an avodah zarah without any question. Harizeh ha'ir ein mutar la'avor ba b'kavana. You may not pass through that city on purpose. V'kol she'ken ladur ba, you certainly may not live in that city. Aval Hashem masarnu b'yedehem ad shenadu ba'areihem Baal Korchenu. But God has delivered us into their hands. What can we do? We live in the exile. Christian Europe was a place for Jews, Lekayem Yadenu, and it fulfills the terrible prophecy, Hara, Va'avadatam Sham Elohim Ma'aseh Yedei Adam Ve'etzvav. And it's in the Tochacha. We'll be ending up living in those places. We may not actually worship those idols, but we'll be living right with them. Ve'im zehu adin ha'ir, if that's true of the city, he says, kal v'chomel adin beit avodah zarah atzmo, certainly the church, shekimat asur lahabit bo, it's almost prohibited to even look at the church, glance at the church. V'kal shekein lekarev alav, you certainly can't close to the church, v'kal shekein hikanes alav, and you certainly can't walk into a church. No suffix, no question, absolutely prohibited. That wasn't the only view we saw. We saw last week also the view of Tosafot. Tosafot have a discussion, not about going into a church, but about doing a deal with, entering into a partnership with a non-Jew. The Gemara says you may not enter into a partnership with a pagan. Why not? Because partnerships are going to end in court. The Gemara makes that rather pessimistic assumption. And you're going to be the cause for them to make an oath on their Avodah Zarah that they're telling the truth and you owe them the money. You cannot be responsible for that. Said Tosafot, but that doesn't apply to the Christians that we live with. You do not have to worry about going into partnership with those Christians, even if you end up in court, even if you make them take an oath, and even if they swear it on their God. It's not a problem for you. Why? Because non-Jews are not prohibited in shituf. What is shituf? We saw last week, partnership. Meaning, he says, when the non-Jews talk about the Trinity, they don't mean three different gods all vying for power. That's polytheism. They mean one God which has different parts. Now, for a Jew, says Tosfos and Rambam, certainly, that would not be permitted. That would for sure be Avodah Zarah. The Rambam, as you probably know, has an extremely maximalist understanding of the concept of unity. If you go into the issue of Yichud Hashem, where the Rambam says that the third of the Yud Gimel Ikarim, the third or the second, third, I believe, where maybe it's the second, he says that Yichud Hashem means that we can't even describe God in any positive terms. You can't say that God is great, powerful, almighty, all-knowing. He says you can't say any of those things. Because even to describe God in that way is, if you like, compartmentalizing an aspect of God which is a dualistic problem for Jews. We say that all the time in the davening. He said, what's in the davening, bless you, is what's in the Chumash. And we're okay if the Chumash says things about God, HaKel HaGadol HaGibov HaNora, and the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, who were Nevi'im, or had Nevi'im amongst them, said you can say that. That much we can say. But any more than that, we can't say. We can only say what God is not, because that's not describing God. And we can only say how we perceive God as acting from our perspective, because that doesn't describe God. Certainly to say something about the Trinity is prohibited, but says Tosafot, for non-Jews, maybe it's not a problem. Now, does Tosafot say you can walk into a church? No, he never addresses that question. They never address that question. But in terms of the vow, then maybe Avodah Zarah, Christianity is not Avodah Zarah. And then finally, at the end of last week, we saw the Me'iri. The Me'iri is an outlier. Because the Me'iri says that paganism is where there is no organized religious ethical value system. He says, but Christians in our times, and he's talking about Catholics in France, in Marseille, in Provence, in the 1300s, they don't have a pagan religion. They have a monotheistic, religiously value-driven ethical religion, and therefore whenever the Gemara talks about paganism, that does not include Christianity. He doesn't explicitly say you can walk into a church. But from what he says, why would you not be allowed to? Unless you say, take the view that the Me'iri certainly agrees that you and I as Jews would not be able to become Christians. And therefore, even if it's not a Beit Avodah Zarah for them, maybe it would still be classed as a Beit Avodah Zarah for us. And that would be another reason why we couldn't go. But the closest you're going to get to someone that says that you can walk into a church is this Me'iri. What is the problem? The problem is, first of all, he's a dat yachid. He's a lone opinion out there in the Rishonim. And also, the Shulchan Aruch didn't know about the Me'iri. How do we classify the Me'iri? We had a shiur once, if you remember, on archaeology and halacha. Maybe it's time to recap that shiur. It's been a long time. What do we do with new findings that didn't form part of the halachic process and that no one really put into the kind of to the equations? The Meiri was discovered to a large degree in the 20th century. Actually, ironically, in the Vatican, most of it. Okay. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch never processed the Meiri. We don't know what they would have said about the Meiri. And therefore, some, specifically the Chazon Ish, but others as well, say, therefore, the Meiri just doesn't count. It doesn't count as a Rishon. Maybe it counts as an Acharon. Maybe. Because it was discovered in the time of. Others say, no, we know the Meiri. It's from the 1300s, there's no doubt. We knew about him before, we just didn't have all his writings. And now we can plug them into the equation, maybe in the same way that new archaeological findings. So there you have the three opinions, the Rambam, Tosfos, and the Meiri, and we talked about them last week. As I said, the vast majority of people, of Poskim and the Rishonim, go with the Rambam. Certainly in the Spanish schools. Even the Spanish school that was not the Rambam's school. If you remember, the Rambam was Andalusia, and he went to northern Africa. In Christian Spain, there was the school of the Ramban, okay, which his student was the Rashba, his student was the Ritva. Now, the Rashba and the Ritva very strongly say not only is it prohibited, but it's Yahareg Va'al Ya'avor. A person has to die rather than go into a church. Have a look at number two. This is an extreme opinion, which we're not going to pass on like, but it's worth looking at right now. Says the Ritva. Tani ish yesh b'avod zara chutz ala mutar. So if there's he quotes the Mishnah, if there's an avod zara in the town, you can live outside the town. But ma ulei lech Hashem, can you walk to the avod zara on the path? So he says, peirush, lefakeach b'asakar. Walking for the purpose of your own business. You just want to sit and have lunch there, or you're doing business there. Bizman she'aderech miyuchedet la'otamakom, when the road only goes there. Now, he says, Peirush Rashi says, Mishum chashad. The problem is chashad. We're going to suspect people of worshipping. Dechash dilei da'azel le'miflach la'avod azorah. We think you might be going to pray there. V'tam nachon hu, I agree with that reason, says the Ritva. Dehabe gemara amrina dechashina le'chashad. The gemara says, we are indeed concerned about chashad. V'afilu b'makam sakana, even if you're in life-threatening danger. Kegoin detzachi maya, you need to drink water. De'iloi shasi meis, and if you won't, you'll die. You can't go in. You may not go in a church to save your life. It's what's called avazrayu, the ancillaries, meaning all the big three, avodah zarah, murder, immorality, have subsidiaries. And the subsidiaries are also yahareg va'al yavor. And he says, this is a subsidiary of avodah zarah, therefore you cannot go in, she yahareg va'al yavor. Well, if he says, asur likanes lebeit avodah zarah, it's for sure also to go into a church. Meaning, on a path which goes somewhere else, fine. But on a path that goes to the church, Yaharik Va'al Yavor. Now that's very extreme. And also, why would it be Yaharik Va'al Yavor if it's rabbinic? If it's chashad? Meaning, no one thinks that you're actually doing Avodah Zarah. It looks as though you might be doing Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the Shach actually rejects this and says that we paskin, he says that you cannot be Yaharik Va'al Yavor on a Rabbono. Which, by the way, is not 100% agreed on by all. The Vilna Gaon suggests that you can. But on this halacha, says the Shach, he quotes the Rambam, number 3, Aleph, which I'm not going to read now, which says no go. And then he says in bed, because of our Torah, b'shem ha-Rashba, the Torah brings, in the name of the Rashba, again, this Spanish school, da'ev sha'afilo al-iske rabim, even if you need to do it for the public, more about that in a minute, afilo al-pikuach nefesh, even for pikuach nefesh, asurli kanespo, you may not go in a church, g'damrin and gabi ma'ayan, as we say in the case of the Mayan. What's the case of the Mayan? The case of the Mayan is you sometimes have these fountains. Think of the Trevi Fountain in Italy. Now think of an Avodah Zarah fountain, where there's water coming out of the fountain, and people put their mouth to drink from the spout. I don't suppose people would do this these days in a post-COVID world, but whatever. People put their mouth on, maybe in Israel they will taka, on the spout, and they drink from the fountain. It says, people think that you're kissing the Avodah Zarah. Okay, so that's mamash, like the Mayan. It looks really like Avodah Zarah. It's Aval Haran. He says, but the Ran says, cholek. The Ran says, no. In our case of going into the church, it's not going to be a problem. It's not like the Mayan. They're like Damila Mayan, the Niruka Oivet. With the Mayan, it looks as though you're actually kissing the Avodah Zarah. Here it just looks as though you're going to the church. You're walking down the path. You're stepping in the church. The Etsha'ay, the Av B'Mayan, and maybe even the Mayan case, it's not Yaharik Val Yava. And that is the Psek. We Paskin, we being the Shulchan Aruch, go over the page for a second.
But still prohibited.
Yeah, still prohibited. It's just, you know, if you're going to die, God forbid, you can go. Yeah?
All these are during the Inquisition.
No, before as well. Meaning the Rambam didn't have, was way before the Inquisition. The Rambam didn't have it. He just ruled it based on the Trinitarianism and that they think God has a body. And the Ritva and the Rashba also were on the cusp just before the everything went sour. Yes, sir.
What exactly does it mean to be there? It appears.
People are going to suspect you that.
If you know there's nobody there, you're the only one, so you can do it.
No.
Does it appear to others?
I understand. Once we start saying things like Maris Ayin and Chashad, it doesn't matter if nobody can see you or if you think that nobody can see you. Now, we said last week that technically Maris Ayin, even though they use this expression Maris Ayin, it's a little bit different. Like, I'll just repeat what I said last week. Chashad is where people see you or might see you doing something and suspect, holy shmoly, not so holy shmoly after all. He's going to do Avodah Zarah. And we don't want people, they're not allowed to do that. They have to be done like Avschot. But, you know, the rabbis are realistic. Maybe the Torah is optimistic, but the rabbis are realistic and people are going to suspect you. And with Maris Ayin, it's the opposite. With Maris Ayin, it's people are going to see a frum person doing something which looks wrong, assume, well, if a frum people do it, it must be okay. And therefore, I'm going to do that too. But they made a mistake. They see you drinking non-dairy creamer after a meat meal and they think it's milk. And they say, well, they'd never drink milk after meat. And therefore, or if it was osa, so it must be mutter. And therefore, I'll do it too. With Maris Ayin and Chashad, we say, certainly with a Doraita, we say, afilu b'chadrei chadarim, even if you're on your own, and there's nobody else that can see, you can't do it. I'll give you an example. You're not allowed to hang up wet clothing on Shabbos because people are going to see it and think that you did washing on Shabbos. That's a Maris Ayin that the Gemara, or a Chashad, I should say, the Gemara kind of bakes it. So what happens if it's in a private room, no one can see you, just took off, slipped off your shirt and like held it over the back? No, it's awesome. Okay, so if it's a raincoat, the kind of thing that always goes for dry cleaning and people wouldn't think that you washed it, okay, maybe there's room to maneuver. But even if it's private, then you don't know if someone's looking from a window far away, seeing you walking towards the church, etc. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, number 5, page 2, number 5, Mi Shenit Chayiv Misa, somebody who is going to be killed, he can escape, he can find sanctuary, but only in a church. I'm not sure it worked for the Jews to find claim sanctuary in the church, but let's say you can escape there. Mishin itchayv misa mutzilivrach lebeis avodas kachavim lahatzel et atzmo. Okay, good.
During the Holocaust.
Right, in the Holocaust, in the convents, etc. So that's clear. We don't paskin the tiharik va'al yavor, but we do, seems from the Rambam, at least Shulchan Aruch, that seems to say, very clearly, not seems, does say, that it is prohibited. What about the Ashkenazim? Didn't we say that Tosfos leaves you a little bit of room? Well, maybe, maybe not. Look at the Sefer Hasidim. Look, go back to number 4, top of page 2. The Sefer Hasidim is a Kabbalistic source. And he brings down from the 13th century in northern Europe, Yehudi Echad, he brings two stories. There was a Jew, Shehalach b'chatzer avodah zarah. He went into the churchyard. Kashiyatza, and when he came out, Shama Baskol, he heard a voice, Sha'amra, like a heavenly voice that says, Va'oisi hishlachta acharei gavecha. That's from the nevuah of Achia Hashiloni to Yeravam's wife, who goes to see him, and he says, don't worry, your husband is completely finished. There's not even any Shaila, he's gone. And this is part of the negative nevuah. And he hears this voice, and he fasted for the rest of his life. He felt that he'd done something terrible. And indeed he had. Ish Echad, he says, another guy, halach b'beis avodah zarah v'nitcharet, he went into a church, and then he felt guilty about it, he regretted it. V'hasha'al azakin l'hoiras lo ma'la'asot, and he asked what to do. Amal, and he said to him, ba'oisa yom b'chol shana titaneh v'chein asa. He fasted on every day that year. So there seems to be very clear precedent in the Rishonim across the board that going to a church is asa, unless there's pikuach nefesh. Now, one second, let's just talk about this. What is pikuach nefesh? Now, the obvious case of pikuach nefesh is like, somebody's about to die, I need to save them. That's called pikuach nefesh lefaneinu. But normally we say that pikuach nefesh, which is theoretical, is not called pikuach nefesh. Let me give you an example. I'm allowed to break Shabbos, obligated to break Shabbos to save somebody who needs to have life-threatening treatment. But if I'm a medical researcher, I can't say, well, I could discover the cure today for cancer and like save millions of people. I'm allowed to get in my car, drive to the lab, break Shabbos, do my research, just in case I save a life. You can't say that. The Nodi Yehuda says, because that's not pikuach nefesh, lefaneinu. That's theoretical pikuach nefesh. So too with an autopsy. To do an autopsy is you have to breach the prohibition of nivul hamet, of desecrating the dead. If there's pikuach nefesh, you absolutely can. Let's say somebody died of a disease, we're not sure what it was. Maybe it was transmittable. Maybe we need to check in order to save others. A case that happened in London many years ago where a baby tragically died after a Brit Milah. And we didn't know why. And the Beis Din said, absolutely, you have to do an autopsy because maybe they have a congenital defect. Maybe there's a problem that the siblings have that nobody discovered yet. And this will enable us to do pikuach nefesh. That's pikuach nefesh lefaneinu. What about in this case? Have a look at number six. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch Paskei Halacha, which allows you to break a Torah prohibition in apparently different circumstances. Says the Rambam, Yisrael Shehaya Karov LeMalchut, a Jew that's close to the government, the court Jew. The Tzarek Leshev Lin Neli Malcheyam, and you have to be there in front of the king. The Hayalo Gnai Lefisha Loi Yid Melahem, and you can't go there dressed as a Jew. With Jewish clothes and a Jewish haircut, and you know, in the old days where Jews had to dress as Jews, you can't do that. Hari ze mutar lilvosh b'malbus shehem ulegaler keneged panav kederek shehem oisem. You are allowed to break the prohibition of chukat hagoy. Chukat hagoy says that if there's a specific non-Jewish way of dress or haircut, imagine the like the monks used to have with a tonsure, with a, like the bald head in the middle and the hair around. A Jew may not dress like that or have a haircut like that. That's chukat hagoy. But if you need to do that to be close to the king, then it's okay. Why? Why is it okay? Why? That's not pikuach nefesh. This is a Torah prohibition. And yet you're allowed to do it, says the Beit Yosef, number 7. The Im Toma, you might ask, Kaven du midoraisa asire hanachmili. All these things are prohibited doraita. This is not a rabbinic. For a rabbinic prohibition, you can understand, well, it's a shas adchak, it's an emergency. This is a Torah prohibition. Umakli nami laki alayhu, you get malchus for this. This is a full-blown Torah prohibition. Heich haya koach b'yad chachamim. How could the rabbis have the power? Lahatir isur Torah, to allow an isur Torah, the kuroi b'yamalchus, just so you can get close to the king. What, just for your job? No, never. V'yesh lema, the answer is, the mishum hatzalat Yisrael, because you could save the Jewish people. Yesh koach b'yadam lahatir, they can allow this for that. The kishyesh Yisraelin kruvim lemalchus, kruvim lemalchus, when there are Jews in the court, they can be there just when they're needed to reverse some terrible decree against the Jews. Levatel hakazeres, meaning this kind of pikuach nefesh is different. We need Jews in court, and they need to be there. They may have to wear the same clothes for decades on end because they need to be there that day when the king's about to do something, and they can whisper in the king's ear and say, "No, don't be so quick to do that to the Jews." This, therefore, is made. What's that? It didn't always work, no. It didn't always work. It did sometimes work. Think of the case of Harry S. Truman, who was being urged by the State Department not to recognize the new state of Israel. And the famous story of the guy he used to be in business with back in the day. Right, Zach Jacobson, who got an audience with Truman, and he said, "Talk to me about anything other than Israel." And he ended up somehow getting him to talk about Israel. He got him to cry, and he recognized the state of Israel. Who knows how many Jews that saved? Because the guy was there right there. So this is used often as one of the justifications. Even if you go like the Rambam, even if you say that it's osa, maybe it's okay for certain people. Yes.
Justification for the
chief. For the who?
For the Rambam.
Yes, let's get to the chief rabbi. So let me bring you into the modern scenario. Yes, sir.
This is Esther.
Yeah, Esther. Good. Yeah, Esther was there. And you know, my favorite line in the Megillah, just I can't help. Everyone today speaks so, especially rabbis, in the name of God. You know, God wants you to do this. God wants you to do that. God's happy about this. I always think in the line of Megillat Esther, where Haman has made a decree, and Esther is right there. Right on the... I mean, that is that not Hashgacha Pratis? And what does Mordechai say? Mi Yodea. Who knows? if this might not be exactly why you're here right now, he would have said, today he would have said, Min HaShamayim. He doesn't say that. He says, Mi Yodea, I'm not prepared to speak in the name of God, but I think you need to do this, whatever. Just one. So in 2008, Barack Obama was elected to be the President of the United States. And in 2009, he had his inauguration, I assume in January, which is when they have them. And one of the events was a service in an Episcopalian church. Now, Episcopalianism is Anglican, and therefore definitely Trinitarian, definitely a church. And Rav Haskell Lukstein, who represented very much as a senior RCA rabbi, he went to the service. Okay, so have a look now at the letter in number 8. After it, he got a lot of flack from many people, including others on the RCA, who said, you shouldn't have gone into a church. How can you go into a church? And Rabbi Michael Broyd from Atlanta wrote a letter to the RCA justifying, as far as he saw it, Rabbi Lukstein's behavior. Number 8. It is extremely important to understand what the Beit Yosef claims as a matter of halakha. Of course, it is permissible to violate almost any area of halakha in order to save those in immediate life-threatening danger. This much we know. But halakha also recognizes that sometimes the only way to save those in danger is through a long-term prophylactic strategy. For example, one's long-term involvement is necessary in certain types of politics to allow a person access and influence in a time of need. In many of the most crucial area of politics, if one is not close all the time, it will be impossible to become close when a need arises. Thus, a Jew may join the government service and wear, despite the Torah prohibition, Gentile clothes every day for decades, so that if a day comes when he can save God's chosen people, he's already wearing the right clothes and in the right place at the right time. This conduct is mutar. The Shulchan Aruch quotes this halacha directly. And as far as I know, no one significant argues with this formulation. The Taz and the Levush limit the allowance to sins that are not explicit in the Torah. For example, eating treif would be excluded. But going to a church, brackets, a rabbinic prohibition. Chashad. He wants to say this is a drabono. We're worried people might see you and think that you are, etc., would be acceptable under this principle. That rationale, I'm sure, explains why many a chief rabbi has attended events in churches, which is what Westminster Abbey is, in case you had any doubt, and why Rav Shai Yishuv Cohen was sent to the funeral of the Pope, which is a Catholic mass. These are not isolated incidents. History is replete with similar examples. I think replete is a bit strong. I'm not sure history is replete, but certainly the chief rabbis of England, of different hashgafic approaches, meaning Rabbi Herman Adler, who went to the coronation of Edward VII, which I clarified was in 1902, and Queen Victoria did die in 1901, as you suggested last week. He was the chief rabbi. Maybe you could argue he was not such a world-class Talmud Chacham. But Lord Jacobowitz, who came two chief rabbis later, was for sure a world-class Talmud Chacham. And he also went to the churches, as did Rabbi Sachs, as did Rabbi Mervis. Now, Rabbi Mervis, when interviewed about this last week, said, well, this is a perfect example. The king sent an invitation, and he commanded me to come. You can't not do what the king commands. Now, somebody wrote on the YouTube channel, I don't think I've ever had a question on the YouTube channel from the OU before, but somebody wrote on the question, oh, come off it. King Charles III is not a real king in the Jewish sense. He's just a symbolic monarch. There's nothing he could do to anyone if they didn't come, even if he does command them to come. Okay, so in theory, that's correct. In practice, still having somebody close to King Charles is maybe not such a bad idea. There have been situations, even recently, where anti-Semitic prime ministers were almost elected. Who knows what good it might do. But have you looked at the last page? I couldn't resist bringing you this. Look on page 9. It looks better in colour. This is the invitation that Charles and Camilla sent out to the royal wedding, to the coronation, excuse me. Number page 9, the very last page. And you see it says here, I just got this online, I didn't have my own invitations in case you wondered. The coronation of their majesties, King Charles III and Queen Camilla. By command of the king, the Earl Marshal is directed to invite person, whatever it is, to be present at the Abbey Church of Westminster on the 6th day of May, 2023. Signed by who? The Duke of Norfolk, who is indeed the Earl Marshal. The Duke of Norfolk has been part of the aristocracy since the 11th century. And he is the head of the aristocratic kind of clan. Okay, so Rabbi Mervis said, how could I not go? I was commanded by the king to go. Okay. Exactly. So here's the lawyer, the legal brain. Actually, it's not true. The invitation simply says that the king has commanded the Earl Marshal to invite these people to the... And indeed, people were invited and didn't go and haven't yet had their heads chopped off. Joe Biden won, okay. He was invited and he politely declined. Meghan Markle for another, although I don't know what's going to be. So I don't know if she was invited, but... No, I don't think the Bible was chashish for the Rambam, no. So I'm just saying that I think the chief rabbi's argument is a good one, that there are, even if he wasn't technically commanded, there are people that need to be close to the church and to the king, and maybe even to the church. And I brought you, you'll see later, Rabbi Lukstein's letter, where he defends himself in detail. I'm not going to look at it now. He says that when I went to the inauguration of Barack Obama, I had a chance to talk to him, and it was during one of the Gaza campaigns, and there was rockets coming out of Gaza, and I reminded him of his words, that if my daughter was being rocketed by enemy forces, I'd do anything I could to save her. Please, President Obama, remember that when we need it. And he said, yes, I remember that. Who knows? Who knows what that did? Whatever you feel about Obama and Trump and all of them, who knows what these things do? However, most of us in this room, if not all of us, are not chief rabbis or senior representatives of the Rabbinical Council of America and cannot use this kind of pikuach nefesh hatzalat Yisrael defense in order to go to churches. Yes?
The mitzvah says that you have to die.
Yes, but we don't pass him that way.
But the Rambam made it more lenient if you had to save your life. Or
he didn't talk about it in terms of the church. Yes, yes.
The
correct, correct, correct.
Correct. But he himself had to pass in that way because he was in the king's.
Well, he was with the Muslims, don't forget. The Rambam,
never
the Christians. We talked about this last week. The Rambam did everything he could to avoid being with the Christians. Even when it made sense for him to escape north, to northern Spain, to save his life, when the Almohads were rampaging around Andalusia, he went south into the heartland of Islamic fundamentalism. And later when he was asked, and we had this conversation last week, to treat one of the Christian kings in Israel, in Palestine as it was, or the Holy Land, some people say it was Richard II. That's just a myth. It wasn't Richard II, but it was probably King Baldwin. Richard II is a whole different story. Okay, he was beyond treatment, but that's another discussion. King Baldwin, he didn't go. He wouldn't go. Even though he might have upset Salah ad-Din when he said, I don't want to go. He said, no, thank you, I'm not going. But anyway, let's move on. We have a lot to do. Page 3. Now, you'll be pleased to know I'm not going to read every word on this page. But contemporary rulings by most poskim for most people say, you may not go to the church. Let's take Rav Moshe Feinstein. Number 9. He was asked by a Jewish school in Manhattan, who needed to rent a church hall for the kids to play football. He said, no way. Kids who want to play, but ulam hashachet tefillah da'akum in a church hall. Kadur, and they want to play ball, but ulam hashachet tefillah da'akum. Vaday asur, it's completely prohibited. Asher ein sham surot, even though there's no crucifixes. They took all the crucifixes away. It's still awesome because the pasukim mishli harchek me'aleha derachecha. Stay well away from anything to do with that, because it says there uzot minut, and Chazal say that is heresy. This is avodah zarah. V'hameisitim, v'hameidichim, and there are meisitim. There are missionaries who hang out, who just want to talk to your kids, who are just there to play football. They're going to be there potentially. Heim harbiv and insaim shamba yotera, and they hang around there. The other rabbi, so on the contrary, yesh lalamid le'alidim she'etrachku misham, you have to teach the kids to get well away from there. V'shehu makom meshukatz umutu av. Very strong lush. Rav Moshe is not somebody who speaks like this all the time. That this is an absolutely disgraceful place. V'avshit sarach lezeh le'ezet ha'am ha'tara, okay, your school needs a hall. Ein lahatir, I'm not going to allow it. But yoseh kesef yesigu ezeh makom. Pay more money and get someone else. Get somewhere else. No go. Rav Avadi Yosef, there'll be no surprises, says absolutely prohibited. He was the chief rabbi, or the deputy, one second, the deputy chief rabbi, I should say, and then the chief rabbi of Egypt in the 1940s. And when he was the deputy chief rabbi, there was a senior Christian diplomat died in Egypt, and the chief rabbi was invited to the funeral and would have gone. was sick and said to Rav Avadia, you need to go in my place. And Rav Avadia said, no, I'm not going. He said, no, you don't understand. This is going to cause a diplomatic incident. He goes, I don't care and I'm not going. And he didn't go and it didn't cause a diplomatic incident. And he paskens absolutely crystal clear, you may not go into a church. He allowed someone to install air conditioning on the outside of a church, as long as it didn't require them to go in. And he analyzes in number 10, I'll leave you to read this in your own time. He says maybe it's not just a rabbinic law, maybe it's a Torah prohibition of connecting with Avodah Zorah, being in a place of Avodah Zorah. And he invokes, quite unusually for Rav Avadia, Kabbalistic ideas, that it's the Sitra Achra, the dark side is going to get you there, etc. And therefore there's no flexibility at all. Yes? No, they were in a church hall.
Right, and the church hall is considered, does everyone consider...
Yeah, he says because it comes under the prohibition of stay away from anything that is to do with that religion because they're going to come and get you.
But does everyone look at it the same way?
No, we're going to see other people who don't look at it the same way. But most people look at it the same way. I brought you Rav Moshe number 11 who talks about art. Yes, sir. Yes, we'll get to that. Where you have people hire out church halls for shul services. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Be'ezrat Hashem. I'm not sure Rav Moshe would allow that, but for sure people do that. Number 11 is a tshuva of Rav Moshe that talks about going into a church to look at art. And he says, it won't help. When the Gemara says that art is not intrinsically prohibited, that's only when it's art which has got nothing to do with religion. But when art is in a church, even if they don't worship the art is there for the glorification of the church. And therefore the art becomes tainted with the same Avodah Zarah. And again, even if it's not Avodah Zarah specifically, you have to stay well away from it. And he says there is no heter whatsoever of going into the church. Similarly, the Tzitz Eliezer, number 12, says no heter to go into a church. I'm bringing you all these people because they're often the people I bring who are the lenient ones. Okay, and we'll see even more in a second. He says, absolutely you can't go to see art in a church. And he says, and I remember when I grew up in Yerushalayim, whenever we got close to a church, the older people pulled us away and said, don't go near it. They stayed, Arba Amos. And there are, this is sometimes turned into nasty behavior. There are people who have been spitting and that kind of thing. I'm not talking about spitting now. There's an interesting, minhag that used to be the Shehei Mishtachavim Lehevel Varik. And people would spit, and that there was a gematria that Larik is the same as Yeshu. That's a whole shir in and of itself where that minhag comes from. I don't recommend spitting anywhere. Certainly the Tzitz Eliezer says no. What about Rav Henkin? Now Rav Henkin, he is a very broad-minded, liberal in a good sense, Pesek. Is he going to give us a heter? The answer is no. Sorry. He's going to give you a half a heter, which doesn't turn into very much. Number 13, Rav Henkin. Shalos and Shuvas Bnei Banim. This is the younger Rav Henkin. Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin, who passed away a couple of years ago. Ika Avodah Zarah Hu Hagishum Shel HaElokim. It's making God into a corporeal body. Corporealization. That's really what our problem is. And also the Trinity. Okay, the Trinity, maybe you can argue with what do they really mean. But that the God came in the body of a man... That's what they mean. That's Avodah Zarah. The Kalzeh b'Natzrut ha-Katolit. This is true of Catholicism. The ha-Orthodoxit. The ha-Anglicanit. That's true whether you're Catholic, Orthodox, or Anglican. It's all the same. Don't tell me the Protestants are okay. And then he says on the next level that the Nachu ha-Knisiot ha-Protestantiot et ha-Sigud le-Tzlamin. Yes, okay, the Protestant Church has pulled away from bowing down to idols. They consider the Catholics to be idolaters. Okay, as afilu dumut ha-ish ala tzalav, even a crucifix in a Protestant church, eino avodah zarah. Okay, if they don't bow to the crucifix, they use it as a symbol. Mikomokam roiv haknesiot haprotestantiot ma'aminot b'shilush, but they believe in the Trinity. Umekaimot pulchan hamas, and they still have mass. V'kevan shemekablim aleihem et Yeshu le'Eloha, and since they accept Jesus as a God, asur likanes lebeit tfilata. You may not go to Protestant church. V'rak hayunitarians, Only the Unitarians, or maybe some of the others, they don't think that Jesus was God, and they certainly don't believe in the Trinity. That's why they're called Unitarians. Okay? Oh, finally, you can go into a Unitarian church when it's not during a service, just like you can go into a mosque. But I don't think you should, even there. Because people don't know all the ins and outs of Unitarianism and Episcopalianism and Trinitarianism. People don't make a distinction between one church and another. All they say is the rabbi went in the church. And therefore, almost all the opinions you're going to find out there, Rav David Cohen in Flatbush, also somebody who is not a machmir by, you know, nature, said you cannot attend President Reagan's funeral. Rav Soloveitchik said it was awesome to watch the JFK's funeral on TV. He said just as it's prohibited for a Jew to enter a church, so too it's prohibited to bring the church into his home. Okay. Senior YU Poskim, Rav Schechter, Rav Willig, have upheld this and said you can't watch the coronation on the television or the funeral or the Pope's funeral. I brought you Kofke. Kofke has a very comprehensive sedra sheet or a halacha sheet where they basically say everything is osa. I'm not suggesting this is a couple of things there are mutter, but not much. They say you can't listen to music played in a church, although they don't distinguish between played in a church service or just played in a concert in the church. So it's not hard to find people that say osa. Is there anyone that says mutter? Other than for the chief rabbis. Let's leave the chief rabbis out of it.
There must be, because in the States, they have a lot of, like, Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, and they're held in church.
Correct.
In a social hall.
Correct, correct,
church.
Correct. So let's see where that goes. So let's look at some potential permissive appearance perspectives. Have a look, please, at page number 5. Let's quote a little bit in English. So there is a book. Excuse me?
Mormons are considered.
Oh, good. What's with Mormons? They're not Christians at all. I'm totally ignorant as to the Mormon church. They call themselves a church, but are they Christians, Bichlau? Okay, I don't know. Homework. They claim themselves as Christians. Okay, we need to do a little bit of research on what's the deal with Mormons. Frankfurt on the Hudson, a book about the Yekkers who came to America, talks about the Yekkershire Masorah on this. And here you have a story about an Orthodox Rav, Rabbi Joseph Karlebach, back in Cologne. Have a look in number 14. This liberal attitude towards secular culture took forms in German Orthodoxy that were inconceivable in Eastern Europe. One memoir tells of the excursions of high school students that the Orthodox Rabbi Joseph Karlebach, who was a bit more liberal than the Breuer family, okay, it's interesting, it's a bit of a kind of a personal view there. Rav Karlebach was a student Rav David Zvi Hoffman, led to the Rhine, which therefore makes sense. The Breuer family were connected with the Hirsch family, who were in Frankfurt, and the Rav David Zvi Hoffman was in Berlin, which was more broad-minded, permissive in some ways. He spent a full day with the boys in the Cathedral of Cologne, expertly explaining every detail of the statues, the glass windows, the ornaments, the intricacies of Catholic faith and ritual, but I was not allowed to participate, says Chaim Cohen, who later became a Supreme Court judge in Israel, being a Cohen who may not be under the same roof with a corpse or with tombs. Now that's fascinating, because Rabbi Karlebach was not bothered about the problem of going into the church, but wouldn't let a little boy who was a Cohen go into the church in case there was a problem of Tumat Kohanim. Now, why would there be a problem of Tumat Kohanim? Everybody buried in the church is a non-Jew. And the Me'ikah Hadin, there is no problem of Ohel in terms of the grave of a non-Jew. So he was worried that somebody might be buried there who used to be a Jew, who converted to Christianity and is buried there in the church, which is possible. But interestingly, Chaim Cohen says, I relate this episode, the end of number 14, because I think it's significant for the portrait of the man. On the one hand, the freedom from preconceived notions of inaccessibility of non-Jewish places of worship and non-Jewish ritual art, and on the other hand, the strict and unbending adherence to the letter of the Jewish law. When questions about the manifest discrimination between the injunctions he honored and injunctions he disregarded, he would readily reply that the prohibitions relating to non-Jewish places and articles of worship applied only to heathens. Who's this? The Me'iri. And not to theistic religions. and that any later extension of the rules were prompted by the then justified fear of conversion to Christianity. So interestingly, Rav Kalbach was more bothered about the Tumat Kohanim than the church. Now, I have an article here which I printed up, which you can get online, which is an excellent article from 2011, where Rabbi J. David Bleich, always good for a comprehensive analysis of everything and anything, in the wake of the Rav Lukstein affair with the Barack Obama inauguration, he wrote up a whole piece on going into churches. And he basically comes out and says, everybody says it's Osa. He quotes this story from Rav Kalbach, and he said, the Mechilas Kvoida Rav Kalbach was not such a big Talmud Chacham. That's what he says. I'm not in a position to judge, but that's basically what he says. As far as the chief rabbis are concerned, he just says they're irrelevant. Okay? Maybe they're irrelevant because they're close to the Malchus, and therefore they're irrelevant to our Shilas, which makes a lot of sense. Where is this position of Rav Kalbach coming from? So I brought you Rav Eliezer Berkovitz. Now again, don't let me give you the impression this is an even-handed debate. Rav Berkovitz was a big Talmud Chacham, a very important theologian, fascinating Jewish thinker, but was fringe halachically. There's no question about that. He was the head of the Skokie Yeshiva there in Chicago. And he says as follows, number 15. And if one were concerned about the beauty, etc., of the churches, there's no question the Jewish people have already been conquered of the desire for Avodah Zarah many generations ago. In particular, this is true regarding Christianity, from which we have suffered over hundreds of years. It is obvious that the vast majority of people do not feel even a hint of inclination in its direction. The situation was completely different in the Middle Ages. Jews at the time were under constant pressure, this is your point about the Inquisition, from the church to convert. Through conversion to Christianity, they would have been able to escape persecution and killings. In such a situation, it was possible to understand the Jews in those days who visited churches would have been, even unwittingly, exposed to constant seduction. And similarly, there was a concern that they would be influenced by the glory and wealth of the church. Today, the situation is completely different. It is only a tiny minority of the Jews who find any value in Christianity. For example, the terrible group Jews for Jesus in the United States. Jews today are not influenced at all from the glory and the icons of the church. It is exactly that glory and all that's connected to it that in modern life that is an abomination to them. So he, again, clearly says that there is no problem, in principle, going into a church. Again, can you rely on this? Ask your own rabbinic local Orthodox rabbi advisor. Rav Berkovitz clearly says, looking at number 16, I brought you a little bit from his tshuva in Hebrew. Mikol Hatamim. By the way, where did I find this? Professor Mark Shapiro, also always good for a comprehensive analysis in a different way, academically and research-wise. He has a piece where in Hebrew, a whole article where he analyzes the permissive opinions for going in a church. And this is part of Rav Berkovitz's tshuva. Mikol Hatamim Hanal, number 16, for all the reasons I've quoted, Nidmeli she'ein shum chashash iser. There is no hint of a problem. Levaker b'mekomot hakedoshim, to go to the holy places shel anotshim of Christian faiths. Mitoich ha'ta'aneutam hastori, just because of historical issues. Or amu umanotitiot or madeit. Okay, sorry, I got the wrong right. Mitoch hata'an, hita'an yunot historit, because you're doing historical research. That's why you're going to the church. Or umanutit, or you're doing artistic study research. Or mada'it, or scientific academic research. Mikol shekei b'Israel. And it's even less of a problem in Israel. Not more of a problem. Because who's going to become influenced by the church in Israel? Yes.
You have a lot of intermarriage, we know, with the non-from Jews in America, like 70% now.
Yes.
And it already, maybe 20, 30 years ago, became, with that framework, to have a wedding. I think you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Both for rabbis.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Now that's a whole...
That's a whole different thing. Because there you're already making a shiluv, you're making a syncretic religion of Judaism and Christianity.
The Jew has the guilt... And
that's for sure.
And so they try to work it out.
Yeah, but no one on this page would allow this. That's for sure. Rabbi Berkovitz certainly wouldn't allow that either. He's just saying you can go into a church. We'll see Rabbi Riskin in a minute. Get to Rabbi Riskin. Rav Herzog, I mentioned last week, Rav Herzog, as the chief rabbi of Israel, had to deal with a different shaila, which was, are we allowed as Jews who now control Eretz Israel to permit Christian worship in Israel if it is Avodah Zorah? Because we have a mitzvah d'oraisa to remove avodah zarah from the land. Now, when we weren't in charge, there's nothing we could do. But now we are. So do we need to do anything? And unsurprisingly, he comes to the conclusion, no, we don't need to. How? Why not? He says, because it's not 100% clear that Christianity is avodah zarah. Not 100% clear. And think of the massive chilul Hashem and backlash that would happen if we did this. And therefore, there's a strong element of Sofek. Sofek d'oraita l'chumra. So he said, we're strict. He says, we can rely on the shita of the Rambam, who says, Sofek d'oraita l'chumra midrabanan. Which is fascinating. The Rambam holds that a Sofek, a doubt on a Torah law, is we only go strictly rabbinically. But on a Torah level, a doubt is not prohibited. The Torah only prohibits something which is certainly prohibited. But where there's a doubt, the Torah permits it. The rabbis prohibited it. But we can rely on the Rambam that it's a Sofek d'oraisa. He puts together a case. He has to. But he says, but if you think of going into a church, you can't go into a church. The Baha'i Temple. So again, we get to other religions at the very end. At the very, very end. Let me just quote you Rabbi Riskin, page number 6. Rabbi Riskin is also a great person to bring in on these issues because he has a strong positivity to interfaith work and has done a lot with the Council of Christians and Jews, etc., etc. So Rabbi Riskin has a piece up that used to be up on the All Torah Stone website that was taken down, but you can still find it, where he says, number 18, evangelical churches do not have icons or statues, and it is certainly permissible to enter evangelical churches. Catholic and most Protestant churches do have icons, as well as paintings and sculptures. If you enter the church in order to appreciate the art, with an eye towards understanding Christianity and the differences between Judaism and Christianity, so that you can hold your own in discussions with Christians, then it is permissible. Participating in a church religious service is forbidden, unless it is for learning purposes, which is pretty broad, or unless it will be a desecration of God's name if you don't attend, as is the case of the Chief Rabbi Sacks, attendance at Prince William's wedding. We're getting a good tour of royal events today. Okay? So, Rav, and I'm quite sure if you went to Rav Riskin and asked him, does he agree with this today, he would say he agrees with this today. I don't know why it was taken off the All Torah Stone website. Maybe it was just fell off for technical reasons. Maybe it was taken down because of political reasons. I've no idea. But I'm sure that Rabbi Riskin would also say this. Again, is he a mainstream posik on this issue? No. But is he someone that you can ask shilas to? If he's your rabbi, then for sure. For sure. But the question is, with all of this, is it, and this is a broader meta-halachic question, let's say you really need a heter. Can you reach out to one of these people that you know will give you a heter to get the heter that you really want? Or is that disingenuous? So I think the answer to that, this is as follows. If your hashkofa in life is always trying to get the answer you want to every shaila, and basically you plug in the answer to Google and say, who says this? Okay, and a chat GPT, I'm sure, could give you a great, you know, list of options, then that's not legitimate because you're shopping around. You're getting God to serve you rather than you serving God. But if you have a consistent attitude towards asking shilas, but you're in a real tight spot, and you say to your Rav, look, this is not normally how I, you know, deal with these things, but I really am in a really tight spot. Where can I find a heter? So that's a different shaila. That's not shopping around. That is a genuine, I think, use. And if your Rav says, look, I've been told by my own Rabbanim in the past, I can't give you a heter, but maybe call X, Y, and Z, maybe he can. What would be situations like this? So I had a student I was talking to the other day. She's a Geiress, and her sister, who's Christian, is getting married in the church. So which way would that shaila go? On the one hand, you might say, well, that's a tight spot. It's your family. Legitimately, not marrying out, but legitimately getting married in a church. Can you go? On the other hand, you might say, well, a Geiress is the person who should most stay away from going to a church since that's what she's left. Okay, good question. But I want to go to Italy and see art because I'm interested in art or I'm doing an art degree. I don't think that's called being in a tight spot. I give you some advice. Go to Florence. Go to the Uffizi Gallery. You'll see plenty of art. Rooms after room after room after room of art, and half of it's from churches, so you don't need to go to churches to see the art. Yes. Okay, I assume that he went there. Okay, So, okay, so then he's going to have to rely on this. Okay, let's talk about a couple of other things. Look at page 7 for a second. You can read Rabbi Lukstein's letter on your own. And he says he justifies going to President Obama's inauguration. He says, I was able to go. Maybe he's right on that. What about other reasons, going to vote, going to shul services? So it's very interesting. So Me'ika Hadin, the Ramah Paskins very clearly, that if you're in on a road that goes somewhere else, not just to the church, then that's not prohibited. He said you should avoid it if you can. But it's not a problem of chashad. Why? Because people can understand why you're walking down there. They're not going to say, you're going to church. So that would include, and even Rabbi Bleich says, this would include all of the cases where you have voting stations in church halls, services in church. Nobody's going to say, you're going there to church. Because you're clearly going there to vote. It says voting. It says Rosh Hashanah, Chag Sameach, or whatever it says on the hall there. No one thinks that you're going to go there to worship in a church. So that would be permitted. In a case which is more direct, number 21 is the Shulchan Aruch, is the one that says you can't put your mouth on the water spout of the fountain because people are going to think that you're worshipping the idol. So the Ramah gives you all sorts of eitzes. What happens if there's a chosh of a person from the king, from the palace, that is wearing an idol and you have to bow to him, but you don't want to bow because it looks as though you're bowing to the idol? Classic midrash with Mordechai and Haman, right? Okay, so he says there you have to be a bit of a Talmud Chacham. You have to drop your coins on the floor and bow down to pick them up again. You have to create some situation where you're not going to be accused of chashad and people are going to say that you're bowing down to the idol itself, you're bowing down to the person, etc. He says if you can do that, that's good to do. What about mosques? Let's talk about mosques and other religions. Go to the last page, or page 8 I should say. So pretty much everybody says you can go into a mosque. Because the Muslims are very, very staunchly monotheistic. In fact, they hold that our synagogues, our shuls are a problem because we have pictures in shuls. We don't have pictures of people, we have pictures of places. You know, Kever Rachel, whatever. And they won't have that. All they'll have in a mosque is, you know, geometric patterns. They won't even have pictures. And therefore, Rav Avadya Yosef in number 25, very clearly paskins, you can go into a mosque, you can even daven in a mosque. And he brings a raya from Maras HaMachpelah. Maras HaMachpelah, for those who remember, used to be mixed. The Muslims and the Jews used to be together. When I was in yeshiva here, when we went to Hebron to Maras HaMachpelah, we used to daven mincha. We were davening mincha on this side of the room in the mosque, and the Muslims were davening in that side of the room, and everybody was doing their thing all together. And now, obviously, it's separate, but he said there's no problem. There is one outlying view, and I just want to look at this for a second, that since Eliezer... Now again, the Tzitz Eliezer says you cannot go into a mosque. Why not? Look in number 24. Umashe Kosov, Kvodeh Sheharav Minahar Shlita, Amaloi Mishmi, it said in my name, Shalakol Beit Sheldat Acheret. I was quoted as saying, says Rav the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Valkenberg, that any religion, Yesh Din Shel Beit Avodah Zarah, that it's called Avodah Zarah. But Gam Mizgad, also to a mosque. I was quoted to saying this. And now you're asking me, is it correct? And why would I say that? And he says, it is correct. I do hold that. I hold that any religious place of worship, it doesn't matter whether they are monotheistic or not, is prohibited. And I get my source, now we didn't mention the Ram yet. The Ram, Rabbeinu Nissim in Spain in the 1300s, and this is what he writes. V'lamadnu mikan shehakadoshim shel kutim, and here he probably means the Christians, not the kutim, the kadoshim, because living in Christian Spain of the Christians, v'gam hamashuga shel ha'ishma'elim, which is how they refer to Muhammad, okay? He was living in Christian Spain, it was safe for him to refer this way to Ishmael, to Muhammad rather. V'afo pi she'ein toyin achreihem la'asot elohot, even though they're not asking us to we're not being asked to worship any other gods. Hoil u'mishtachavim lifneihem, hishtachavah she'elohut, since they are bowing down there as a religion, as a theological statement, Din Avodis Elilim Yesh Lehem. It's called Avodah Zarah. The Ram has a very unusual shita, which nobody else basically says, which is that non-Jews are meant to be Sheva Mitzvahs worshipping God. People, they keep the Sheva Mitzvahs, the seven Noahide laws, they're not allowed to make their own independent religions. Doesn't matter what they are. They can be the most monotheistic in the universe. You're not allowed to do that. And that's called Avodah Zarah. And the Tzitzeliezer says, I follow that view. Therefore, you can't go in a mosque. This is an outline view. Almost all views say you can. Rav Shechter is not happy for you to go into a mosque because he says you're not allowed to investigate any other religions. He holds that to be an Issa Doraisa. And the YU poskim are actually quite machmir on that. Although probably not many people are asking shaylos about going to mosques in America, but who knows? What about other religions? And I just want to mention this at the end. It's very, very difficult. If you don't know what the religion stands for, it's very hard to make a decision. Is Buddhism Avodah Zarah? So if you speak to people that say, well, Buddhists don't worship Buddha. They just use the statue of Buddha in order to connect with the force that they're connecting with. Oh, okay. So does that mean it's not Avodah Zarah? So you can't become a Buddhist, although plenty of Jewish people have become Buddhists for different reasons. But maybe you can stay in a Buddhist monastery overnight if you're at a conference, if it's not Avodah Zarah. But then who do you ask? What about Hinduism? Hinduism actually has little statues, which they do worship. The question is that just the man in the street that worships the statues? Yeah, this is the wind god, this is the rain god, this is the sun god. But if you ask the theologians, they'll say, ah, shtuyot. These just represent the force of God, and therefore people are using, ah, so is it not Avodah Zarah? Who do you ask? Lahavdil elif avdalis, if you ask a Jew in the street, why do you put a mezuzah on the door? So plenty of Jews will say, the mezuzah gives me protection. Oh, that's Avodah Zarah. You ask a Rav, he'll say, nah, shtuyot. It's also to say that the mezuzah is a mitzvah. The mitzvah connects you with God. The connection with God gives you protection. Okay, so who do you ask? So that's an interesting question. So before you make any definitive statements about Hinduism, Shintoism, Buddhism, or any other ism, you have to look into it because it's not always straightforward. Remember the Hindu shaitals, the Avodah Zarah shaitals? Remember that? A few years ago, every 25 years, somebody pipes up and says, oh, you can't wear shaitals because they're all sacrificed, the hair is sacrificed. And I saw people burning their shaitals. I saw it with my own eyes in Har Nof, people burning shaitals. And as I always say, it's only the hotheads that burn their shaitals. And then they sent a dayan to India who stopped a woman going up to give her hair. And he said, what are you doing? She said, I'm bringing a sacrifice. He goes, oh, awesome. Until they sent some Baal Tshuva guy who used to live in an ashram who actually knew what was going on. And he said, no, she doesn't mean a sacrifice. She means like a Mesiris Nefesh. She's cutting off her hair as Mesiris Nefesh because of her religious principles. It's not a sacrifice. And then everybody says, oh, it's okay then. The shaitals are all right. And every 25, and put a diary mark in, please, for 2014. Someone's going to pipe up with this again. And before you burn your shaital, please ask a shaila. Okay, we'll leave that there. Next week, I am not here. Next week I hope to be in London, Be'ezrat Hashem. But after that, 2 weeks from now, I hope to be here for the rest of the summer, till August, please God, and therefore please make a note of that too. Thank you so much.